Welcome to the Perry Johnson Registrars Podcast, where you can expect the latest news and discussions related to the management systems certification industry. Today's episode is a previously recorded webinar. If you would like to tune in to our upcoming webinars, visit our website at www.pjr.com/webinar or give us a follow on your favorite podcast app. Thank you for tuning in.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for joining us today. We're going to be discussing the AS9104-1A, the new revision that was released and we're currently in transition to. And we want to go over specifically today how that's going to affect your organization as an aerospace certified company. So today we're going to talk about the new requirements for your organization, the future of remote auditing, new documentation submission requirements that are going to be in place, and the new audit duration calculation, how we are going to be determining your audit time. The first new requirement we'll go over is talking about your standard. 85133 states the AQMS standard utilized for certification shall be selected based on the organization's scope of certification. And then right under there, there's a note that says, refer to the intended application of the AQMS standards to determine the selection of the appropriate standard. So what does this mean? It means that the scope of your organization, it needs to match the standard to which your organization is certified to. During the transition, we're going to be reviewing everyone's organization, their scope, and making sure that your standard that you're currently certified to matches what your scope is. If for some reason it does not match, we will let you know and we will walk you through the process of changing over to the correct standard. So what do the standards represent? 9100's application is for organizations that design, develop, or provide aviation, space, and defense products and services, and by organizations providing post-delivery activities, including the provision of maintenance, spare parts, or materials for their own products and services. 9110 is intended for organizations whose primary business is providing maintenance or continuing airworthiness management services for civil or military aviation articles and products, and by OEMs with maintenance, repair, and overhaul operations that are operated autonomously or that are substantially different from their production operations. And AS9120 is for organizations that procure parts, materials, and assemblies and resell these products to a customer in the aviation, space, and defense industry. The next new clause, 85111, states that CB shall suspend certification and retain documented information supporting that suspension decision for any of the following conditions. A, when an organization fails to reestablish conformance within 90 days from the date the nonconformance was issued, or B, when an ethical complaint or ethical related nonconformity has been substantiated with supporting objective evidence. So for this one, what it means is that when you are issued a nonconformity, if your organization is issued a nonconformance, you then have 90 days from the date the nonconformance was issued to get your organization back in conformance. You have 90 days from the date it was issued to make your correction to that nonconformance. So an example would be if you were issued a nonconformity due to a management review missing in a required input or output. Your organization then has 90 days to either complete a new management review to include those missing inputs and outputs, or you could conduct a gap review to cover those missing inputs or outputs. So it's the correction we have to have completed within 90 days. Currently, the standard states 60 days. So this is actually a 30-day extension from the current requirement. For the second one, if we get a complaint or a notification through OASIS about any kind of ethical issues, we have to do an investigation. So this could include requesting documentation from your organization, conducting interviews, we may need to conduct a special audit, etc. An example of an ethical concern, if we can receive a complaint that a non-conforming product was shipped knowingly without proper disposition or informing of interested parties. That would be an ethical concern. § 9.12 states that the ASQMS certified organizations have their AQMS standard certification suspended, shall provide notification to their ASD customers within 15 days of suspension. So if your certification is suspended, you have to let your customers know within 15 days of that suspension date. I also just wanted to follow up. It's not a specific clause number, but it does discuss the structures that are going to be allowed in the new standard. So we're no longer recognizing a campus, several site, or complex structures. The only structures that will be recognized are single sites and multi-sites. If your organization is currently not a single site or multi-site, there's no need to worry. We're going to be reviewing everyone's organizations that fall in the campus, several, or complex structures. And we're going to be making a determination about which structure, either single or multi-site, is appropriate for your organization. We'll reach out to you if there's any kind of additional information or documentation that we might need. And we'll let you know, we'll have discussions with you about which structure your organization will be changing to based on the requirements. The future of remote auditing. Clause 8542 states, where a physical location of a site exists and ICT is utilized, a maximum of 50% of the audit duration may be conducted remotely. ICT stands for Information and Communication Technology. So what does that mean for your organization? Right now, we are able to conduct remote audits up to 100% if you fall within two categories. One, there's a government or local restriction for travel in your area, or two, your organization has a policy in place that prevents any outside visitors from coming on site. Those are the two reasons we can currently do remote audits 100%. Once this transition is complete, remote audits for 100% will no longer be allowed. We will only be able to do up to 50% of the audit remotely. 8543 states that where a physical location of a site does not exist, such as a virtual site, the ICT shall be utilized in accordance with IAF MD4. So IAF MD1, what is a virtual site? A virtual location where a client's organization performs work or provides a service using an online environment, allowing persons from different physical locations to execute processes. And then there's a few notes underneath that. The first one says a virtual site cannot be considered as such where the processes must be executed in a physical environment, such as warehousing, physical testing, laboratories, production, manufacturing, installation, repairs to physical products. Note two states that an example of such a virtual site is a design and development organization with all employees performing work located remotely, working in a cloud sort of environment. Note three states that a virtual site is considered a single site for the purpose of calculating audit time. And note four states that for further information, you can refer to IAF MD4, which is the MD for the use of information and communication technologies for auditing and assessment purposes. So according to IAF MD4, what has to happen for the remote portion of your audit? Well, we've been doing this for the last 3 years for organizations due to the coronavirus. So we've been conducting quite a few audits at 100% remote. We would continue that in the same manner if it was a virtual site. We will also continue that in the same manner if we do up to 50% of your audit remotely. So there'd be a form that we would send to you that you would need to complete to make sure that your organization has the capabilities and infrastructure and technology that we would need for a remote audit to take place. You'll go ahead and send that form back into your scheduler. And if it's determined that the organization is capable, We would then set up a live stream audit and go-to meeting. Or if your organization prefers a different type of platform, that's completely acceptable. We would go ahead, just let us know what you prefer, and we would go ahead and consider using that for your audit. An audit duration is going to be calculated the same if it's as for a physical site. If we are doing your audit on site, it's going to be the same amount of audit duration as if we were going to do your audit remotely. New documentation submission requirements. This is quite significant, and it's going to be a big change for organizations. 9.1.10 states that AQMS certified organizations shall provide data required by the standard to their CB prior to initial surveillance and recertification audits for the completion of the OCAP analysis. So what does this mean? Certification bodies now have to complete an OCAP analysis, which stands for the Organization Certification Analysis Process. We have to complete this form in order to determine how long your audit is going to be. This means that we can't schedule an audit until the information is received from the organization. Information is required to be verified once the auditor comes on site. Therefore, we cannot have information submitted too far in advance of the audit, as the auditor has to confirm it during the on-site audit. However, we also need to take and consider auditor availability. So we can't have the information submitted too close to the audit due date either. Therefore, the information, we're going to start requesting it about 4 months prior to the audit. We'll give you a little bit of leeway time in there between the 3 and 4 month mark. That way it's close enough to the audit that we have recent information to verify once on site, but it's also far enough away from your due date that we're going to have auditors who will be available to conduct the audit. What are the new documentation requirements? What type of documentation do you need to submit to us? Some of them are similar to what is already being requested, and some of them are new. We're going to need a copy of your interaction of processes, a copy of the internal audit program or procedure. So if you have a procedure for your internal audit program, just go ahead and you can send that in. We need a copy of your on-time delivery goals and actuals for that time frame, a copy of conformity of delivered product or service goals and actuals for that time frame, so your quality, customer satisfaction goals and actuals. We're also going to need to confirm the number of sites you have, the number of employees you have per site, and what your scope of certification is. And the final item is we're going to need a list of additional aerospace standards that your organization may utilize, such as 9146, FOD prevention, or 9102, first article inspection requirements. We will be sending out a request for the required information to your organization prior to each audit. So you'll have a list, so you'll know exactly what you need to submit for us and when you'll need to submit it to us. Once we get that information, we can start the new audit time calculation process. First of all, I wanted to point out that they've changed some of the terminology. So audit duration is the time from the opening meeting to the closing meeting of your audit, where audit time is all on-site and off-site activities, such as planning, report writing, auditing, and NCR management. The information that you're submitting to us that we're going to be requesting from you, we're going to use that to determine your organization risk. You'll either be low risk, medium risk, or high risk. Once we determine what your organization's risk level is, we're going to go to Table 8 in the standard, and it's going to give us our audit duration per site. So depending on the number of personnel you have and what type of audit is being taking place, the initial surveillance or recertification audit, we'll simply use that chart as our starting off point. It is the base audit duration. Once we determine the starting audit duration, we're going to take your risk level into account. If your organization is low risk, you get a 10% reduction to that base audit duration time. If it's medium risk, there's no change at all. And if your organization ends up being high risk, there's a 10% addition that will be added to the base audit time. Something new is that if you have a multi-site, there might be site-specific processes that we can do a reduction for if it doesn't occur at your site. Examples: if management of the QMS doesn't take place at the site, or design and development, control of externally provided processes, or control of production. Any of those items, if they are not occurring at a site, we can give reductions to the base audit duration for that. Due to this, it's extremely important that your interaction processes is clear as to what's done at each site so we can make sure that our quote to you is accurate and we can give you all the reductions that are allowable for the site. A5165D states the total reduction by site after all adjustments, including rounding, shall not exceed 50% of the audit duration. So if your organization is low risk, you get a 10% reduction. If your organization then, the site does not do design and development, or it does not do management of the QMS, all of those reductions, we have to stop at 50%, even if they add up to greater. 85166 states to determine audit time, 20% shall be added to the total audit duration for all sites. This added time is used for OCAP analysis, audit planning, and report writing. So once we get your base audit time with all the reductions or additions necessary, we then need to add 20% to that time to account for audit report writing, OCAP analysis, planning. I'm going to go through an example so that we can kind of show you exactly how we will take the employee account and all of the other information into account. So let's say it's an organization's recertification audit, and there's 66 employees, they were low risk level, and design is not applicable. Table 8 states that the starting base time is 5.5 days. Then you get a 10% reduction for low risk and a 20% reduction for no design responsibility. So the 10% reduction and 20% reduction equals the 30% reduction total, which is 1.65 days. So 5.5 days base minus that 1.65 days equals 3.85 days. And then we round to the nearest half day, which would be 4 days. So that's 4 days of base auditing time. Then we're required to add 20% due to the planning and et cetera. So 20% added onto that 4 days equals 4.8 days. That would be the total auditing time for your organization site. I know that we've gone through quite a few things today, and if you guys have any questions, there should be a question box that you can go ahead and type into. Also, here's my contact information. So if you have any questions about anything else or anything that you think of after the presentation, please feel free to contact me. You can either email me there at abrown@pgr.com, or you can call us at 1-800-800-7910. You can ask for Amanda Brown, and my extension is 5712. Okay. So when will these changes go into effect? Well, it really depends on when we finish our transition. Currently, we are planning on towards the beginning of 2023. We will reach out and I will send out notification ahead of time to give you a much clearer date when we get to that. But yes, that right now we're planning on January, February timeframe for us to begin following these new requirements. Are these requirements PJR specific? Nope, it is actually the standard itself that is changing. So all certification bodies, PJR included, have to follow all of these new requirements. Are you still subject to the F-108, which was the questions, it was the information that we sent to you, requesting information be sent into us prior to an audit? No, we were going to be, the information that we will be requesting from you now, the 4 months prior to your audit, that will be the only information that we will request. It'll be a new form for you. It'll have everything listed out on it. It probably will still be called the F-108, just a different version of it. But whatever that information I went in today is what we are going to require. So what is the determination of a high-risk site? So in the program, let me see if I can get back to it for you. So as you can see on here, this is what we have to determine. There's complexity, there's internal audit performance, on-time delivery performance, conformity of delivered product or services, customer complaints and feedback. And then if you've had a previous audit, we're gonna have to look at your previous pair information. We put all of that information in here. If your complexity equals low, then you get a 1 for that score. If your internal audit program is normal and average, you would get a medium score. And there are requirements for this within the standard. Your on-time delivery and quality, if you are exceeding it, you would be low. If you're meeting it, it would be medium. And if you are not meeting it, it would be high. Same for customer complaints, feedback, customer satisfaction area. And then for your pairs, we have to take the lowest value from your last audit. So if your last pair, the lowest value was a 4, you would fall into that medium category. We add all of those numbers up, 1, 3, or 6, whichever one you fall into for that category, and it gives us a total. We would then take that total and divide it by 6. If that number falls within 36 to 25, your organization is high risk. If it's 24 to 12, it's medium risk. And if it's 11 to 6, it's low risk. So having one area out of all 6 of these that may be high risk does not mean your organization is a high risk for that site. It simply has to be added in and totaled up. It may not affect it at all. Most organizations will probably fall in the medium risk category. Should all registrars contact their customers very soon? I'm guessing, I know that there are some other certification bodies out there who have some information up on their website. I'm not sure if everyone does yet. Everybody's going to have, there is a certain transition deadline, but everyone will be transitioning at a slightly different time because we have to be able to implement these items and then get approval by our accreditation body. So they will most likely be contacting you. I just don't know exactly when they will be reaching out. The slides, I believe, are going to be available on the website. So if you missed some, absolutely, you should be able to go onto the PJR website and download these slides. So a question says, if we have an audit scheduled for February of 2023, when and what will we need to fill out? So February of 2023, I'm pretty sure that you're going to still be falling under the category of the current standard that we are following. Once we transition, we will have 90 days to start implementation. So even if we do transition in January, it won't be until the April timeframe that we are then conducting audits to the new standard. So February, you should still be in the current standard that we are following now. I had another question about an audit taking place in March. Again, it'll probably be the same as if the audit was in February. It shouldn't be affected, my guess, until April timeframe of audit. But we will let you know absolutely as soon as we find out. I have a question about if this is the only new standard or new requirements. or are the rest of the standards changing? So the standards that you are certified to, whether it be 9100, 9110, or 9120, they are not in the process of changing. Those requirements will remain the same. So the audit will still be just as it is now, even under the new AS 9104-1A. These are just new requirements for CBs to follow, including some items that we had to pass on. So we have to follow and make sure all of the companies have the correct standard, the correct structure. How we're calculating your audit time is different. Those are the main ones that are changing that would actually affect your organization. So just a couple questions I see about the PowerPoint presentation. Yes, it will be on the website. Just to repeat, you should be able to download it off of our website. All of the slides will be on there for you. I have a question about, is it true that most companies will now fall into the AS91 category based off the new verbiage? I wouldn't say that that's necessarily true, no. 9110 is very specific for repair, maintenance, and overhaul activities. So if you are doing repair, maintenance, and overhaul activities, and you are currently certified as 9100, then yes, you most likely, your certification is going to need to change to 9110. 9100, the way that it was previously implemented, there were certain companies that were able to be 9100, even if they did repair, maintenance, and overhaul, or even if they did distribution. But this new version of the standard is very clear that we have to follow the standards based off of what they are applied for. So again, 9100 is manufacturing, 9110 is repair, maintenance, and overhaul activities, and 9120 is for distribution activities. But again, if we will be reviewing all of your scopes, and if there is any need for a change, we will absolutely be reaching out to you, and we will walk you through how that change would take place. Okay, I'm just scrolling through to see if there's any more questions. Okay, I don't see any more questions currently, but again, please feel free to reach out to me. I'll pull up my information for you. Again, it's Amanda Brown, and you can contact me by email or by phone. It's abrown@pgr.com. Or the number is 1-800-800-7910, and you can simply ask for Amanda Brown or extension 5712, and I will be more than happy to answer questions, even if it's not specifically about these topics. If you have any aerospace questions, please feel free to reach out to me, okay? So thank you very much again for coming. I appreciate you taking the time, and I look forward to working with all of your organizations through the transition.